The world has changed a lot since the last policy document on foreign affairs in 2003. The election of Donald Trump as United States president, the rise of China and its stake in the South China Sea, and North Korea's deepening nuclear program have entered the picture. Foreign Minister Julie Bishop says global events make the need for a new foreign policy document more pressing than ever.
We are living in very unpredictable times. There is significant economic, strategic, political instability around the world. And Australia is an open, export-oriented market economy. Yeah. We have interests globally. And we decided that it was time to look at our interests, our priorities, how we engage in this uncertain world.
In a Facebook Live event last month, inviting public input into the process, Ms. Bishop said it's important that Australians understand the impact of foreign policy.
We think it's really important to have as broad a consultation as possible about what Australians want to see from their foreign policy. I guess it's trying to make foreign policy less foreign, so that people can relate to how our foreign policy affects their day-to-day lives. And it surely does, whether it's in trade, the jobs that come from trade, whether it's in security.
The government is sifting through over 9,000 submissions. A number of them have called for a focus on gender equality. Care Australia Chief Executive Sally Moyle explains why her organisation did.
Gender equality should be one of those values, and it's really important that we see that over the last 30 years Australia has actually engaged as a good global citizen promoting gender equality, and we should do that deliberately and actively because we see that gender equality is the thing that is actually going to help us to deliver a better world, both stable, peaceful and wealthy.
Ms. Moyle says initiatives on contraception, family planning and abortion reduce maternal mortality rates in developing countries.
So about 40% of all contraceptive need in sub-Saharan Africa, for example, is just not met. So, and in our region, in some countries, it's approaching that as well. So we know that women aren't able to access contraception at the rates that they'd like, whether it's because of expense or logistics, you know, travelling to health centres, or through unequal gender norms that mean that women don't get to make those decisions for themselves.
In 2015, Sweden's government announced it would put gender equality at the centre of its foreign policy. Plan International Australia has urged the Australian government to follow Sweden's example. But the Australian Christian Lobby, in its submission, opposes any funding for abortion services or comprehensive sex education programs. The group says such services impose an agenda for social change which conflicts with the community's traditional values, where the heterosexual family is the fundamental social unit. The lobby has campaigned for the government to follow the United States' lead and ban foreign aid spent on abortion. Spokeswoman Wendy Francis says it does not necessarily equate with gender equality.
I do not know that Ms. Bishop can actually guarantee that our money will not be spent on sex selection abortions overseas. And certainly if we're wanting gender equality, this is not the road to get gender equality.
That US withdrawal has left an estimated funding hole of $9.5 billion for family planning services. Australia says it will maintain its family planning funding, currently 0.7% of the aid program, but will add an extra $19 million over 3 years for humanitarian crises. Murray Stopes Australia, which provides reproductive health services for women, has welcomed the move. The group's executive officer and regional director, Chris Turner, says the continued funding of safe pregnancy programs is critical to advancing gender equality. And he says that, in turn, supports the social and economic development of the countries.
If you're in a country with resource scarcity, preventative health services such as family planning are very often the last on the list. You need to focus on emergency things and curative services and basic functioning of the health system often. So family planning is left behind, which is a mistake and a bit of an irony in that investing in family planning on the front end would reduce pressures across the health system and provide benefits across the social and economic indicators.
Professor Andre Renzaho, a humanitarian and development studies analyst at Western Sydney University, has worked with aid agencies and evaluated more than 40 AusAid programs. Born in the Congo, he says he supports funding for family planning services, but warns aid agencies do more harm than good when they do not consider cultural sensitivities.
when you go to countries in Africa, you know, if you're not a married woman, you don't have any value in society. And if you marry a woman without giving a dowry, then you are no longer a woman who is desired by the family you're joining. So by paying a dowry to marry a woman, you belong to the husband. So if you bring in family planning programs without involving the men who are the decision maker, have a role to play because they know they paid the dowry, they know the woman belongs to the family. So you are somehow creating some conflict, marital conflict, because then the woman, you know, can decide how many children they are going to have without the husband making decision. The woman can decide when to have a child without the husband vetoing a decision because of those differences dictate that relationship. So those are the challenges we are confronted with, but we are not always effectively addressing when we plan family planning programs.